You're listening to Cider Chat Live. I am your host, Rhea Wynn Collar, the producer and cider MC at ciderchat.com. On Cider Chat Live, it is stories in real time straight off the Cider Chat train to you. So come on along and join the fun. I'll be looking for you out there in Ciderville. Yes, it's another episode of Cider Chat Live as I continue to roll out compilations of all the mini chats and snapshots from my recent tour to the United Kingdom. Last week's episode 191 is titled London Got Cider, and it certainly does. There's a lot to be had there, including a conversation about a new book coming out in October called Fine Cider by Felix Nash. And I'm curious if that has elicited responses. I could tell it has a little bit in terms of how you classify fine cider. If you want to send me a little bit of a note on that, do send it my way to Rhea, that's spelled R-I-A, at ciderchat.com.
I'd love to.
You never know who's going to be in the cider house when it's pressing time or a barrel's open, or in my case, I'm recording another episode of Cider Chat. Everyone's welcome, and the palms certainly roll in, and they roll out, and they're always a barrel of fun. Next up, we're going to be going to West Country in the United Kingdom. I was just on tour there. I left from London and drove out with both James Mann and Colleen O'Sullivan. They are the folks behind Duck Chicken Cider. There'll be a more featured chat coming up with them. But in the meanwhile, I want to bring you right to the Ross Cider Fest. This is an annual event that takes place over the last weekend of August, beginning weekend of September. And it's been taking place for a long time, like 20 years. And so it's a pretty well-established event. You're going to hear from a number of parties. And I thought what this particular episode of Cider Chat Live, I was really thankful for all the folks who put it together, all the people behind the scenes, like Annie, who's been working there forever, and just all these folks cleaning up. It was kind of like being at Disney World. You'd wake up in the morning, everything be clean. Folks were so gracious. I can't speak highly enough on how well this was run, feeling so welcome. The music was fantastic. I had no idea what the music was going to be like upon arriving, but it was super eclectic. In fact, I have some cuts from John Edwards, who is the cider maker at Ross Cider and Perry Company, and he has a band. And they played during the Ross Cider Fest. So we're going to be doing some cuts of that, especially during my feature chat with John Edwards, which will be coming up in an upcoming episode. So there was a lot going on. And I thought, you know, you got to start with the volunteers, the people who make it happen. So first off, we're going to go and hear a little conversation I had while I was checking out this food cart. But it wasn't your typical food cart. It was in a cleaned out, if you can imagine, a horse trailer. At least a horse could fit into it. And they had set out a counter, and there was three young folks up there serving food. And I had a fun little chat with them, and I thought you might enjoy hearing it too. So let's go there next at the Ross Cider Fest 2019.
All right, so I'm with the volunteer crew here in one of the most stealth spots in the setting here at Ross Cider Fest. It's in a horse trailer? What is it?
It's just a livestock trailer. They put sheep in it normally.
Oh, normally sheep, but you know, you wouldn't know that sheep are in here because it's so darn clean with like a blue neon light. And they're overlooking the lower barn, all the tables, so it's like really the best view here. So what are your names?
I'm Harriet.
Okay, nice to meet you.
I'm David.
David, Harriet, and?
I'm Solomon.
Donovan?
Solomon.
Solomon?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And have you been working the fest for a couple of years? Is your first year?
We've been doing it for, me and Solomon have been doing it for about 5 years. It's David's first time.
First time. What do you think as a first timer? I'm a first timer too.
Yeah, it's such a good atmosphere. It's not what I was expecting. I don't know what I was expecting.
Did it surprise you, the atmosphere here? Was it kind of like...
Yeah, everyone's just so friendly.
Yeah, what were you thinking, like a cider fest? Is there like a certain attitude around a cider, you know, as younger people? You're not of drinking age, right?
So, I am.
You
I'm
are?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What is the drinking age? Is it 18?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So what do you think about cider?
I like it, personally. Not all of them.
Quite a lot of them.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what typical style do you like then? I imagine you know a little bit about style.
Dry, sharp sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, that's really cool that you know so much about it. I am definitely impressed.
Well, I've been coming here for about 11 years, so...
I mean, your parents probably are, like, way into it.
They're actually behind the bar.
Hello. Hello. Okay. And let's give your parents a shout-out.
Johnny and Rachel.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I'll introduce myself. Could you just tell us what you have on the menu tonight?
So we're just serving lamb, but, like, a variety. So we've got the lamb ball shop, which is sort of like a lamb in sauce, almost like a stew sort of thing. And then we got the barbecue lamb, which is basically lamb in a bread roll with like this cider stuffing with a bit of apricot. It's really good.
These names on here are something that I don't normally see. Can you actually read what that is for the listeners? I know that's like, it's very quintessential your region of the world.
Okay, so the barbecue lamb is low and slow smoked roasted Shropshire lamb, which is a type of sheep, with apricot and Hancock's Meadow cider stuffing. Hancock's Meadow is the farm that it comes from, in a locally made roll from a fledgling artisan bakery.
Did you write that? Was that your...
No, that wasn't my writing.
That was really darn good. That's impressive.
Very poetic.
For £7. What a deal.
And
this lamb, how was it cooked today?
In a barrel. So they put...
An oak barrel.
An oak
outside.
Barrel, yeah. So they smoke it. So it's got the coals underneath.
How does it not burn from the inside?
It's a bit like a barbecue, so you've got the coals, but they're like burning embers, and you just sort of have it on the rack, and together with that and the smoke, it cooks it. It's amazing.
I gotta check that barrel out.
Yes.
I saw it smoking. I didn't want to touch it. That's the coolest darn thing.
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome. Well, you know, thank you for making this festival as awesome as it is. You have like one of the most magnificent treasures in the world, and you're part of that. And I'll be back either tonight or tomorrow for that barbecued lamb with the roll from the fledgling artesian bakery.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
I remember Albert Johnson, who is the son of Mike Johnson, who is the man behind the Ross on Wye Cider and Perry Company, writing to me and saying, you know what, there is good food at this cider festival. And indeed there was. So that cart was selling lamb, smoked lamb out of a barrel. Okay, so let me just pause there for a minute and just give you this picture. The day before, I had been walking down the hill and I saw this oak barrel. Like, imagine a 55-gallon barrel upright. So it's not on its side, it's upright. And just smoke was coming out of it. I'm like, what? I've never seen anything like that before. And that's where the lamb from the cart that Harriet, David, and Sullivan were selling came from. So it was definitely my quest to find out more. How do you do this, or who is doing this? And wouldn't you know, it ended up being Albert Johnson's cousin, Toby, who set up the smoker in the oak barrel. And do know that I have photos of that barrel, so you could check it out at ciderchat.com. In the meanwhile, we're going to next hear from Toby Lovell and his wife, Kate. They are the people behind Hancock Meadow Farm in Ross-on-Wye. The family obviously is all interconnected. There's lots of cousins. And even while I'm talking to Toby, you'll hear a little bit of Albert coming in and getting in on the conversation too, which was a lot of fun. So let's go there next behind this sheep trailer. I soon found out it was a sheep trailer. And to Toby talking to us about smoking lamb in an oak barrel.
Okay, wait a minute. All right. But this is all wood. And the very bottom is wood, too. You haven't done any protection.
No, I put a metal bowl in the bottom.
I see the bowl, but underneath that?
That's wood. Yeah.
It's just wood. That's really the coolest darn thing. Yeah, so you started with the, like, apple wood, or it doesn't matter, or it's just...
Apple wood. Well, any fruit wood's good. Or you could use oak, or...
So you use wood and charcoal and just made a plastic thing out of a barrel. And it looks like it's a reinforced barrel because of that.
Well, and only because the staves shrink with the heat.
No kidding,
so
yeah.
You have to drill each one.
That makes a lot of sense. And then this was just a stainless bar going through for the rack.
Yeah.
And dang.
Yeah, and that was it.
That is a first. I've never seen anything like that. Is this common? Is this something that, am I freaking out for, like, unnecessarily because it's very common?
No,
but I'm like freaking out. This is amazing.
No, I've never seen one. We just built it. This is the first one we built on spec, didn't we?
We did a wedding, and there was 300 people. And then we were doing a hog roast, and they were like, oh, we want two lambs as well. And then we didn't have any way of cooking the lambs on the hog roast machine.
That's so brilliant.
Toby's had a bad foot, so instead of doing work, he just sat tight and drilled all these in.
Oh, my goodness. Is that your lamb?
Yes.
So you raise lamb, too. Cool.
Our lambs are the ones that raise the orchards.
Here at Broom Farm. Wow.
So Toby is Albert's cousin.
Oh, okay. Wow, okay, cool. And so you're a sheep farmer. And is that what you're primarily doing?
That is what we primarily do now.
Yeah.
So we have two flocks of sheep.
Yeah.
We have a flock of pedigree Shropshire sheep, which are grazed in the orchards here. And then at home, which is 6 miles away, which is on a piece of ground that we bought just before we got married, didn't we, Kate? We have a flock of Friesland milking ewes, which we milk to produce an artisan raw cheese milk cheese, which is this guy's project, really. So we make cider, make artisan cheese, produce lamb, pigs, various Christmas turkeys, poultry. So the sheep that graze over here are the Shropshires, and they're the ones that are tree-friendly, so they can graze in orchards without damaging the...
Tree-friendly. Interesting. Never heard of that before.
Well, it was...
Fantastic.
Without going into it, really, it was... The Shropshire Society was selling a lot of sheep live for breeding for export to France and Scandinavia, and they didn't know why, and they cottoned on that a lot of vineyards, orchards and Christmas tree plantations on the continent were looking for Shropshires because they said they don't bark the trees to the same extent that a normal
don't like bark.
So when we were looking at what variety of sheep to start with ourselves here, and Shropshire's only next door anyway, we did a little bit of research and it came up orchard friendly sheep, so we tried them. And then we've done a number of trials since then.
You had experience with sheep before you did that?
When I grew up here...
There were sheep.
When my grandfather and uncle So Mike, Albert's dad, yeah. were farming here.
Yeah.
There were sheep and some of the orchards.
Okay.
So where my grandfather farmed here, it was a dairy farm with a small herd of cows. Then Mike built up the sheep, and then the orchards took over from that. And then
but
we wanted to.
They didn't have Shropshire.
No. But they didn't raise the orchards. We just didn't have as many orchards.
Right. Okay.
So by the last foot and mouth outbreak, which is 2001, by then the last of our sheep had gone and we didn't restock. It was only a few years after that that when I came back here from university, wanted to do something. Really wanted to get some sheep. Then we looked at Shropshire. And it's been really good. And there's been a number of projects and offshoots of it to do with grazing orchards. So it's built up quite a good business because people Google Shropshire sheep in apple trees and we come out and, you know,
it's an unusual, is it a niche market in terms of sheep?
It is, but it's growing, and the reason it's growing is because...
Well, obviously, maybe we should be talking about this.
Well, it's good to talk about it, because but it's the idea that you can try and reduce the inputs that you put into the orchard by, A, producing a second crop from it, i.e.
Right.
the lambs,
right,
but
right.
also you don't have to put diesel in to mow. We would speculate that you probably spray less because there's a certain advantage to having sheep in there that means you reduce you increase airflow through the orchard by having a higher canopy, so you raise it, so you reduce more.
It's brilliant. I mean, like, bring the Shropshire. Is there any downside to these sheep? Are they temperamental?
In orchards? They're really calm.
What? There's nothing. There's no downside.
They stand on guards. They can push them down, but that's the end.
They stand on guard?
Like on the guards.
Oh,
the
on the guard. Okay, I was like, what are they, Great Pyrenees? Stand on guard, you know. That could be a downside. Wallace and Gromit with the sheep that really have quite some personalities. they stand guard. So, yeah, I mean, so they stand on guard, and that could be a problem, but not... It's not a major one. If that's it, I mean, so you're doing this, and it's something you've been doing for a while.
Yeah, we've been doing it.
Yeah, we've had
six,
for
6-7 years now.
Bravo! And so what is it? What is it called? What your farm is called? I mean,
agroforestry.
No, do you have a name like, you know, Ross Cider?
We're Hancock's Meadow Farm.
Thank you. I'm taking so much in that I can't take it all in. Yeah, okay. What I'm talking about there is there's a sign right here and I didn't see it. Jeez.
But we'll be here tomorrow.
Thank you.
With...
No wonder you're wondering, like, what is she talking about? Don't you know?
But we'll be here tomorrow right with some of our cider and some of the cheese.
I'm moving the tent. Right here. Right. Okay, I'm just gonna bring my sleeping bag. So it's a little.
They won our cider competition.
No kidding.
Best dry cider.
This is Albert Johnson speaking of Ross on Wye Cider and Perry Company, the host of the Ross Cider Fest.
As voted by their peers who entered the competition.
Wow, that's super cool. So you two are cousins.
Yes.
And so is it from paternal side, brothers, your...
My mother
his
was...
His mom and my dad.
Okay, all right.
My sister.
All right. What's your mom's name?
Monica. Yeah, she died last year.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And, yeah.
Wow.
So there was Mike, Monica, and then there's two more sisters who are around doing more food.
So Mike had all sisters.
Yeah, four sisters.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, look at that. What a cool family. Wow. And how many siblings do you have?
Four.
Yeah. The number four is kind of special around
here. Three of them are going to be here.
Three are going to be here?
Like you, your brother, and your sister.
Oh my gosh.
My one sister lives in Canada. So she's not coming this year to the Cider Festival, but the rest of them are, aren't they?
We shall never forgive them.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
No.
It's okay. It's a pretty good excuse. Although you're here from Massachusetts. So.
Oh, well, you know, that's okay. That's a little bit of sibling kidding and cousin kidding. That's cool. I saw this coming down today, this morning, and I saw it. I was like, I'm smelling something. And I see it's just like puffing. And like, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? And then I was talking to Blair and Jonathan. No. I was talking to the volunteers. And they tell me it's like all on a barrel. Like you're just doing it just like that. It blew me out of the water. And what you're doing with the sheep and stuff, you're really very, very cool.
Come and try the cheese tomorrow.
I am totally.
That's a whole new.
So bull shot is what you have traditionally on a shoot day. So it keeps
on a sheep day.
Shoot day.
On
so
a shoot
when
day.
You're shooting pheasants, pheasant shooting. So we've got 4,000 pheasants that arrived last week, and then he looks after the pheasants until, and then we have 6 shoot days, and various people come and shoot. But bull shot is what's always served. On like January, February, cold, so it's like warming, slightly alcoholic beverage. That,
I didn't see that there was any alcohol in there. Did I miss that?
Yeah, sherry.
Oh, I did. That's right, sherry.
It's difficult to like advertise what we actually do because it's so cool and it's and the structures are all like grass fed and
it's kidding.
So exciting.
Yeah,
and
it is.
But it's difficult to like bring that across to people who don't come.
Good. Well, you just did it. I mean, this is going to be the most popular conversation on all the stories I do while I'm in the UK. Everybody's going to be like freaking.
I'm not kidding you.
This is like people.
We were thinking of doing a wine barrel next. Like,
yeah, jeez. I mean, what surprises me about this barrel is you don't have to worry about it burning. Like, there's a wood, it's charred.
It does worry me.
It does worry, but you've been, how long have you been? It does worry me, and you look to the side.
We've had this for.
What could happen?
4 years now.
It burns, and then it would stop the meal, perhaps.
It set on fire inside before, and then we've just.
You just put it up.
It
yeah, because it's charred.
We did have a tap in here at one point, and then we just put water on, and these would all swell back up.
So you put water on while you're going. God, you can like do so many things.
We did have like a watering can that we used to spray on, but I think it's all right.
I mean, have you ever like poured, I don't know, juice, apple juice or whatever, you know, just like something that's not flammable, and it would go through and use it as part of the thing. You know, and kind of like, so you pour like fresh pressed apple juice on it and it's kind of soaks through, lets it swell up. And then that's kind of like, that'd be, I mean, the sky's the limit here. Well, you let me know how that goes because I can see the wheels turning.
Hancock Middle Farms has it going on. You could definitely tell. They have the Shropshire sheep, which is a mouthful. I mean, just to back up a little bit, this is a region of the world where that animated claymation movie Wallace and Gromit came about. And if you have not seen Wallace and Gromit and you like cider and you like cheese and you like everything about England like I do, you got to see it because it's kind of like my experience going to this part of the world was like walking into a living picture book of every story I ever had read about this region and actually meeting the folks. I can't really tell you more than that, except that you have to experience it also. So we met Toby talking about his barrel, the oak barrel that he uses for smoking, and he raises sheep. And we were having the lamb in the food cart there with Harriet, David, and Sullivan. And then Kate Lovell came in and talked to us about that type of meal that is used during like the hunting season. And that was pretty interesting, the bullet shot. And next we're going to hear from Kate's mom, and she's going to tell us a bit about making cheese at Hancock Meadow Farms.
Begin with your name, your full name.
Pauline Healy.
And you're from?
Hancock's Meadow Farm, and that's in Ballingham in Herefordshire.
And is that connected to Toby and Kate?
Yes, I'm Kate's mum.
You're Kate's mum.
Okay. I am indeed.
You guys got like a full service thing there.
Yeah.
You have, I don't know, do they call it charcuterie? I mean, it's not really charcuterie, you're not processing the meat there.
Not really, we are smoking it, but yeah.
And so are you primarily working with sheep's milk for your cheese?
Absolutely, just sheep's milk.
All sheep.
Yeah.
Now, not just any kind of sheep. Can you let folks know what kind?
Yeah, the Frieslands, East Frieslands.
Oh, so not the Shropshire.
No, we have two flocks. We have the Shropshires, which run in the orchards.
Oh, interesting.
And then the Frieslands are specially bred for making cheese. So they're very prolific in the number of lambs they have, and so they consequently have a lot of milk.
So, do they look different?
They do. Yes, very different.
What's the difference?
Well, they're quite tall sheep. They've got quite goatee faces with big ears, and smooth. The faces are smooth haired rather than woolly.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, they're very unusual looking sheep. Yeah.
So you're using one of the products, which is the milk. What about the wool?
Yeah, they have good wool. Wool is a bit of a dead loss, really, because it costs us more to shear the sheep than we can get for the wool.
Yeah,
so it's not a hugely productive thing. But they do produce a good fleece, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about the cheeses that you have here.
Okay.
You have this block of cheese. You must have a cellar or something? Is
yes,
that how you
have,
set that up?
At home, we have a cellar that's cut into this hillside beneath our house, and that's perfect for aging the cheese. So it's got a consistent temperature of around 15 degrees and centigrade. And then it has quite a high humidity because the back wall of it is just in the rock of the hillside, so it gets quite damp. And,
nice.
Yeah, it tastes
very
lovely.
Nice. And was this something that you have always been doing, or
no,
something
no.
new?
I used to be a teacher, and we started to keep a few sheep, and then we thought, how can we get a bit of value added to this? Because we needed to, you know, we only got a small amount of land, and we needed to get a reasonable return on that. So we looked for something to do, and I thought, I really would rather like to try and make cheese. So that was about 5 years ago. We made it for ourselves to start with. And this is really the first year that we've sold it commercially.
Wow. And so are there different styles of cheese?
Well, I make different cheeses for us at home, but we only sell this. This is a hard-pressed cheese, which is matured for about 4 months, 4 to 6 months. And that's the one that we sell. So the softer cheeses we just eat ourselves.
So you're just selling one kind of cheese here
at
today?
At the moment, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long does that actually age? And it looks like you might have like wrapped it into something because it's a round piece of cheese.
So there's nothing on the rind, it's just aged, as you say.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long was that aged for?
This was made in April.
April, okay. Lovely.
So 4 months.
Now, folks who don't know sheep's cheese, what would they be looking for? What is a descriptor of a good sheep's cheese if you hadn't had it and all you're aware of is cow's milk?
Yeah, well, I think the main difference is that there's more of everything in ewe's milk than there is in cow's milk. So you get it's a really creamy cheese, mm-hmm. and the milk is very high, rich in everything. So it's a high fat content, not great if you're on a diet. It's a high fat content cheese, and I think that's what makes it have the flavor, really.
Okay, very different.
And it's good for, you know, you can use the milk to make ice cream without adding cream to it. It's so rich. So
ice cream.
Yeah, that's really good.
But how much milk do you get out of one sheep?
We get about 2 liters a day when they're in the sort
2 liters
of
a day, farm. That's quite a bit.
Yeah.
Is it difficult to milk a sheep?
No, not
the
really.
Same?
It's
a little bit lower. You have them up on
lower.
A stand,
yeah,
right?
You have them up on a
kind of like a
gantry.
Goat stand,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. they're pretty, they chill out. They're
really key. The first few days, they're a bit surprised.
Yeah, what's going on here?
But once they realize that they're going to get fed, at the, you know, they're more than happy to go
okay,
up.
Okay,
yeah.
they go right up.
Yeah, they do.
And are you, how large is the flock that you're working with?
The flock, you mean the
of sheep. How many sheep are you?
Oh, the flock, sorry. Well, this year we were only milking 22 sheep, and but next year we're hoping to go for 50. So
busy.
Yeah.
And is it solely you doing this, or?
Well, Toby does the milking.
Oh, okay. Toby's quite good at
he's
doing
versatile.
A lot of things.
Yeah,
good.
Very versatile. So he does the milking, and then I make the cheese, and Kate helps me when she can because she's obviously working
perfect.
Still.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So today here are you selling plates, and then you're selling it? You have a scale here.
Yeah, so we're selling.
Look at that scale. That's not just any scale.
No, it's
that
great.
You have like the little weights that go on one side,
yeah,
and then
right.
it's an Avery scale, and the other side has some marble
yeah.
top.
And this is a ceramic. This is specially for cheese.
Especially for cheese, so it's
yeah.
a cheese scale.
Yeah.
Because it's this type of top.
Yeah. Yeah, large and flat. Cheese and butter is what this
wow.
is designed for. Yeah.
Wow. And was this something that was in your family,
no,
or you pursued
no,
it and found
yeah,
it?
Yeah, we found it.
What's a guesstimate of the age on that?
At least 100 years.
100
yeah.
years old, yeah.
We
I've
have
never
a
seen
cheese
like
press as well at home that we found, which is a similar age, and that's what we use to press our cheese. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the flavor... We are now at your farm. You know, we're the flavor. It's not gamey, but it's not flocky. I don't know. You know, doesn't smell like a sheep. And it's just a delightful, like with a little, you know, bit of cider and cheese. You're like in heaven. You're
I think
a slice of heaven.
Yeah,
well done. Well, thank you very much.
A little bit of lamb, a little bit of cheese, and next up, a little bit of a cider conversation with Albert Johnson of Ross on Wye Cider and Perry Company, based in Ross on Wye in Herefordshire in the United Kingdom.
For us, the thing is that we're really lucky in the UK. Most people in the UK who are cider makers, it's not their job. They do it as a side project or a hobby,
right,
or a side business. But for us, like, this is what we live, and it gives us the opportunity to, when we taste each one of our ciders, because our job is to make cider, like, we drink more cider than most people. And we drink more different ciders than most people,
right,
because of
right.
how we approach producing it. We can taste a single variety cider, which like Joe Public or even Joe Cider Drinker might taste and say, okay, this is like nice cider, but it's not that interesting. And we say, well actually it really is interesting because we've just tasted the Davignon single variety, the Trevor's
right.
single variety, the Rani Herbert single variety, and we see where this fits in this whole beautiful tapestry that is everything we do.
Yeah.
And so for us, like, you have what's in your glass, but it's not disconnected from everything else that's in the bottle waiting to be tasted. The whole thing is one continuously moving picture because the cider isn't static. We don't
right.
kill the cider, we bottle condition it.
Yeah.
So
it's alive,
it matures
it's alive.
The whole time.
Yeah.
It's alive and the flavor is always changing. And it means that like every time we open a bottle and we share it amongst ourselves, we are simply enriching our own cider experience and carrying on our cider journey. And I think that's why we love it so much. Because
yeah. But I want to get back to the point you were saying where we do it differently. There's something that you're saying there. I mean, this is all part of it, but I was wondering if there was like some kind of nugget that you're getting to.
So when we press late season Davignon, We don't know what it's going to taste like per se when it finishes, but we know that when we're going to have it in our glass, we're going to say, this is Le Saison d'Amanet. So for us, it's like the reverse process, is that we're seeing stuff ferment and getting to enjoy it after it's gone through its own process. We put it in the barrel and it says, I'm going to do my own thing. And then when I'm ready, you can taste me.
Well, isn't that how people are supposed to make cider?
Well,
just you like you follow the palm. You follow where the palm goes. You go with that, and you don't try to like.
If you try to become master over the palm,
it will never happen.
It won't happen.
It won't happen.
It will always reject you.
Yeah.
But we have
takes the stress off.
We have this amazing, beautiful home that we live
you
in,
do.
And we make cider in.
It's insanely beautiful.
The fact that we can be so creative and do so many things with the cider that we make here is just like an amazing privilege.
And fantastic, yeah. Brent, yeah, it really is.
And like, I don't really.
This is pretty darn full here. It's a Friday night. I mean, look, people. Somebody's walking down here with like a shiny metallic suit. I mean, it's
well,
like just getting.
Everybody is welcome.
I'm wearing my apple socks.
Our cider festival.
You know?
Everybody is welcome.
Yeah, yeah, I love that.
Like it was when we won the BBC Food Awards. It was like recognition for the 3 decades of farming that my dad has done, and the direction he's taken it in, and the principles that he has led it by.
Right.
And now we're reaping the rewards for that in advertisement. And it's not just in sales and cider, but it's in the people that want to come and spend their weekend with us.
Right, right.
So the whole thing is just like making the name Ross & White Cider higher on people's lips.
You say it, Norman. And the dog speaks.
I suspect by now you could get the sense of the buzz in the air, and it wasn't just cider, but the good will and the good people that attend the Ross Cider Fest. And it has to do with the heart and soul. It's the family and the volunteers who show up every year to make this event happen. And that doesn't just happen, I know, at the Ross Cider Fest. It happens at festivals around the world that are helping to promote palms and helping to raise a glass in tribute to cider and enjoy that quality. What a pleasure it was to be able to meet some of the people that I've been having conversations with online in the virtual Ciderville space and to actually sit down and speak with them. There's going to be more coming up, Ciderville, and I don't want to close out before I just read you a couple lines from an email that came in from John, the cider maker at Ross on Y. John writes, "Hey Rhea, firstly, well met, and then thanks for asking all the right questions. Really great to talk to a ciderhead that gets it. No more Miha honeys, please. Americans never believe it is this simple. Usually just keep asking the same questions till they get the answer they want. Okay, it's sorcery, all right. I'll give in. You got me. Anyway, has anybody got any rizzles? Booze on, John X." Better known as John Edwards, and you'll hear his full name once we go to his chat. Oh, delightful fellow, makes some kick-ass cider of his own, and definitely is really helping, along with all the Johnsons, put raw cider on the map. We'll be coming back to this and more UK cider chats coming up, but in the meanwhile, I want to just remind you of something else coming up in my spot of Ciderville. I hope that you're getting a sense of how I like to travel out and about in Ciderville, with good people, good food, and good cider. And the next time I go out and about is going to be on the 2nd annual New England Cider Tour, heading out from Greenfield, Massachusetts, kicking off Franklin County Cider Days. That's going to be taking place October 31st, and it's a one-day cider tour with six makers. That's right, six makers in one day, many of which do not open their facility to tours. So it's going to be super special to be able to have that one-on-one in an intimate setting in both New Hampshire and Vermont. I hope you could come along with me. All you need to do is send an email to Rhea@ciderchat.com, put in the heading New England Cider Tour, and then I, in turn, will send you the details and sign you up. And if you'd like to get a little bit more info on the stops and places and people we'll be meeting, just go to the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com. Want more Cider Chat? Go to ciderchat.com and find over 120 in-depth conversations waiting just for you. This is Rhea Windcaller. Thanks for listening, and please share the news that cider is going up around the world.